The Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS. The January-February edition of the Rare Coin Market Report is out now. Now edited by our friend and former Coin Week staff writer Josh McMahon-Hernandez, the PCGS Rare Coin Market Report offers the latest look at rare coin prices, insightful articles from leading experts, and PCGS's renowned and gorgeous coin photography. Also, you can celebrate PCGS's 35th anniversary with new limited edition coin inserts, all featuring state-of-the-art security features that will give you peace of mind. Visit www.pcgs.com to learn more. Hi, everybody. This is Charles Morgan with Chris Bullfinch. And this week on the Coin Week podcast, Chris and I will go over our tips and strategies and how you might be able to assemble a really cool modern U.S. coin collection by not buying a single coin, but instead pulling each and every one of them out of face value. And we'll also let you know how you can organize your collection and improve upon it as you find new coins. You'll learn our strategies and tips next on the Coin Week podcast. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, Charles, I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I had a really cool trip to the mailbox today. And guess what came in my mailbox, young squire?
What was in there?
Well, I got this December 2020 edition of the Journal of Early American Numismatics. This is volume 3, number 2 from the American Numismatic Society. And I cannot wait to spend the weekend looking at it. They have a very lengthy piece of Thomas Goadsby's letter book. These are basically taking Goadsby's writings and putting them in type and putting them together so you can see how he interacted with people in the production of some colonial coinage. Also, there is a great piece on S.C. Kingman and Fugio restrikes. And finally, an article about lead and pewter cast counterfeits that were discovered in the 1970s under I-95. I always knew something was buried under I-95, but to read about these very interesting counterfeits can be something very cool. And do you know how you can get a copy of this yourself?
I think if I was going to try to get a copy, I'd probably become a member of the American Numismatic Society.
Yeah, you'd want to do that. You can also buy the edition on their website. But the American Numismatic Society is certainly an organization that is worth your time, no matter how sophisticated or unsophisticated your coin collecting interests are. You'll definitely learn something, and the benefits of their scholastic and scholarly research has enriched my enjoyment of coins, and I'm completely stoked at having this arrived in my mailbox.
Well, I'm glad to hear that the unsophisticated can benefit from a membership. That means that I'll get something out of it.
Perfect. So there's something kind of big going on. If you're watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, you may want to take note. We're in a transitional year of the American Silver Eagle. What's going on with that coin?
Yeah, so as anyone who's followed the story of America's silver bullion coin knows, a new design is being introduced this year, 2021, after a number of years of sort of thinking about it and after having a couple of designs proposed. The new Silver Eagles are going to be available in mid-2021, featuring a design of an eagle coming in for a landing designed by Emily Dampstra and sculpted by Michael Gaudioso shortly before his retirement in late 2020. It'll be replacing John Mercanti's heraldic eagle, which has been on the reverse of the American Silver Eagle since 1986 when the series was introduced. And there will be a proof striking at West Point of the final proof striking of Mercanti's Silver Eagle at West Point. And then once Dampstra's design is introduced later in the year, there will be proof strikings for her piece from West Point and San Francisco. And yeah, so then they'll shift the bullion strike designs over as well. So that's what's going on. That's what's been going on with the American Silver Eagle. There's a big change. So anyone who's collected that series or enjoys them should absolutely consider picking up either some of Mercanti's final or some of the final coins featuring Mercanti's design, or some featuring and or some featuring Dijkstra's new design.
Yeah, Mercanti's design is definitely going to go down as a classic. I've had the opportunity to talk to John a number of times. I consider him a dear friend. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. John was very proud of the reverse work he did on that. It typifies, I think, one of his strengths, which is fine line art. If you go through the Modern Commemorative series, you'll know that John did a number of the architectural coin designs, it's just amazing. If you take the sophistication of Frank Gasparo's Memorial Cent design, of course, that's on a very small canvas, take that form and make it more intricate, more detailed, more exacting, you kind of get a taste for what John did with his line art and his engraving. And also, I know I've talked to John about the engravers at the Mint who he admired. He deeply loved almost every artist who worked there with him, above him or under him. But he spoke very highly of Gaudioso's work. I think it's a great final contribution of his career that he gets to take the reverse on the most popular numismatic and bullion coin that the U.S. Mint produces. So if you kind of dipped out of the American Silver Eagle design, 1986 to 2021, now will go down as a complete period. And then 2021 onward, to a date unspecified, will be a new era. But this is definitely going to be one of those years you want to check out. You might want to get that last of one design and the first of the other. Collectors like bookends, and here's your chance.
And any collectors or investors concerned about security can rest a little bit easier buying the new American Silver Eagles, because they're integrating anti-counterfeiting technology. There's been a large spike in counterfeiting of American Silver Eagles over the last number of years. In fact, in 2018, a survey conducted by the Industry Council on Tangible Assets, ICTA, back in 2018, actually found that American Silver Eagles were the most commonly counterfeited, or at least were the silver bullion coin that a number of dealers were most likely to have encountered. So the study concluded that it was one of the most, if not the most, frequently counterfeited coin. And so calls for the Mint to implement security features had been coming from a number of quarters for quite some time. And so these new American Silver Eagles with Emily Dijkstra's design will have anti-counterfeiting technology. So that's also, that's an element of these coins that's worth examining.
Yeah, super important. Speaking of counterfeiting, let me share with you, Chris, this email I got today from CoinWeek.com from a reader, and see if you can chime in on this. I was kind of blown away by it. Mm. The reader wrote, "I just bought a Morgan Silver Dollar. I was a skeptic about the price, so I only bought one to see if it was legit. After about 6 weeks, it showed up, and it looked fine. So I bought 27 more for a price of $199. I noticed on my PayPal that the offering company was from China, but am thinking there are coin collectors in China and maybe someone is liquidating an estate. 6 weeks later, the coin showed up, still was a little uneasy about them, so I put one on a scale. It only weighed 22.8 grams, so I'm sure I got screwed. This company is advertising on my Facebook account. The coins look great, by the way. They're scuffed up and dirty, but they're not very worn. Not sure what to do with them at this point. Sounds to me like this collector got taken and should have known better."
I hate to say it, and I hate to hear these accounts of people who go out and spend any amount of money to buy coins that are counterfeit. But this is unfortunately a painful lesson that I think should remind our audience that if buying coins, try to go through reputable dealers or dealers with whom you have a relationship. Going from anonymous sellers from China, that is a surefire way to end up buying counterfeit or forged coins. Although interestingly, you know, Charles, I was thinking about this. I only recently learned the difference between the term counterfeit and forged, because for years I had used those terms interchangeably. I just kind of thought, oh, it's a fake coin. So forged, counterfeit, I thought they were synonymous, and they are broadly similar, but I find the distinction between them interesting, that a counterfeit coin is a coin, is a fake coin that's struck intending to pass as a regular coin in circulation, whereas a forged coin is a fake coin designed to be passed off as a collectible piece. And I, you know, that distinction is really interesting to me. And so, you know, whenever I, you know, there have been so many conversations in numismatic spaces about counterfeiting, especially as the kind of scourge of counterfeiting has gotten so much worse, or the problem of counterfeiting has gotten so much worse in recent years, that, you know, hearing about this all the time, I actually ended up kind of looking into the terms, and they are different, which I found sort of interesting. So my question to you is this: would you consider these Morgan dollars, I would argue, are forgeries as opposed to counterfeits, because they weren't struck with the intention of circulating them, because Morgan dollars don't circulate anymore. So wouldn't it be fair to say that the coins that this unfortunate listener or reader of Coin Week wrote in about are forgeries as opposed to counterfeits? Or do you think that the term counterfeit also describes them?
Well, I think in this situation, I mean, the intent of it is clearly to deceive a coin collector. An actual Morgan dollar should weigh 26.73 grams or thereabouts, right? So I don't know what these coins are made of from a metallic content situation. I still think, as their legal tender, even though, you know, one would be foolish to take an actual legitimate Morgan dollar and use it, you certainly could, and it's still worth a dollar. So I would just say there are no Santa Clauses in numismatics. You know, there is nobody who's going to have a valuable coin that they could sell for market price or retail price, and they're going to give you an inside scoop, an inside deal, and sell it for much less than it would be worth. And if you go on to any reputable coin website, or even eBay, and you see Morgan dollars trading from dealers with like reputable feedback ratings, you're going to see that they don't cost that much money. They cost maybe twice as much. And nobody is going to sell you 27 more for $199.
And no, that's crazy.
And so, you know, going into this deal that you're trying to take advantage of a situation, and you think you're smarter than the person selling it to you. And that is where you make the mistake. This person got taken for $199 plus whatever they paid for the first one. My recommendation to them is to take all of the records of their transaction and the coins, contact your local office of the United States Secret Service, hand it over, let them start an investigation into the seller to see if there's anything that they want to or can do about it. You're not going to get your money back if they're going to scam you for the money and send you these fake coins. What makes you think that they're going to accept it back? What, are you going to give them a negative feedback rating? I mean, so it's a $200 tuition and in the School of Hard Knocks, and don't make that mistake again.
Your point about tuition cost is well taken, and it's unfortunate, like you said, that this person had to end up losing what, 200 some odd dollars on a deal that ended up not being above board. But unfortunately, that is a risk you run, and you know, ideally, you, again, buy from reputable dealers, try to get to know the dealers that you're buying from, and you know, there are lots of honest dealers out there who will, you know, sell you coins at a fair price, assuming you're willing to pay it. And, you know, it's best to go through those people. So in the future, just please go to an established coin dealer.
So if you're a new collector, and you may be, and if you are, welcome, there's actually a way to collect U.S. coins without paying a premium for any of them. And unlike our emailer with their situation with the fake mortgage dollars, you can almost be assured that you can put these sets together and every single coin will be authentic legal tender U.S. coins. And so today, Chris and I are going to embark on the first of a two-part series where we teach you and give you some tips about how to put together coin albums of coins. This part, we're going to talk about pulling coins from circulation and what you're looking for. And in the next part, which we'll publish next week, we'll talk about how you will be able to collect classic U.S. coins. Now, those coins you will have to purchase, preferably through reputable dealers. But we're going to give you best practices, how to store them, and what to look for when you're putting your set together so that you'll have a set that is not only beautiful to look at, but will be put together at a reasonable cost to you and in the best conditions so that the coins the set will have a coherent look to them. So I look forward to that second part of that where we're going to talk about some great U.S. coin designs throughout the 19th and 20th century. But today we want to focus on modern coins. And this is a way for you to either do this yourself just for your own personal fun, the treasure hunt aspect of it, or to introduce younger collectors into the coin collecting hobby. And you can buy any of the materials that we're going to talk about in this podcast from CoinWeek Supplies on our website. We have them from different brands. I'm not going to tell you one brand is preferable to the other. It all depends on what the aesthetics are that you're looking for. But essentially, we have in circulation 1 cent coins, nickel coins, dimes, quarters, and half dollars. There are also golden dollar coins, some Susan B. Anthony's that are around, but you'll find it a little bit unsatisfactory, I believe, trying to build an album of golden dollars from circulation, because all of the dates after 2011 were only produced for collectors and sold at a premium by the mint. However, you can reasonably put together a collection of cents, let's say after 1940, nickels, with the exception of maybe some of the war years, World War II, dimes after 1965, and quarters after 1965, and maybe even half dollars.
You probably have a really hard time with a 1950D Jefferson nickel, though. That's a fairly rare coin.
You might,
at least rarer than its compatriots.
Yeah, you might. There might be one or two there, but you can put together for the most part complete sets of these coins by taking them out of your change, and we're going to talk a little bit how you do that and sort of how you can use this as an exercise to teach yourself how to grade circulated coins, to learn how coins circulate over time, and to also learn what uncirculated coins look like. So let's start with Lincoln cents. So the Lincoln cent was issued first in 1909, and it was the first U.S. circulating coin to honor a United States president. And it started a trend that really didn't kick off in full swing until the 1930s, with the introduction of the Washington quarter, and then in 38, you had the Jefferson nickel. And so at that point, we start to see liberty being removed from coins and allegorical figures going by the wayside to be replaced by historical figures. Now, it's 2020 now, so the last wheat penny, that's the original design from Victor David Brenner, had two wheat stalks and very simple reverse, which actually I prefer to all of the reverses. That design ended in 1958, and it's going to take you some amount of searching to find any number of wheat cents. About 20 years ago, I went through a few thousand dollars of pennies from my bank in Arizona, and I was able to put together rolls and rolls of wheat cents to the tune of about $1,000 worth of them. When I sold them at a coin dealer at 3 cents a piece. Now it's been about 20 years, so I think that it's probably going to be that much harder to find a quantity of wheat cents, but they are still out there. But at the very least, you should be able to find most dates of Lincoln Sense from after World War II to the present without spending a single penny over their face value if you are able to acquire these in rolls and in quantity. Have you ever tried to do this, pull coins from change?
Yeah, I think the earliest Lincoln cent I ever found in change was 1919. I know the two earliest were 1919 and 1929. The dates stick out just because they both end in nine. This was years ago. This was in like the early 2010s. And then I found 1925 Buffalo nickel in change, a dateless Standing Liberty quarter, a couple of 1964 Washington silver quarters. So I've had some luck. I haven't done it in a very systematic way. I've grabbed a few coin rolls and dug through them, you know, done some coin roll hunting, but really not very much, though it does seem like a lot of fun. And it's something that I've always kind of meant to get into, but especially with the pandemic, I don't think I've been in a physical bank in probably over a year at this point. Because most of the things that I need to buy, I can buy online or with a credit card. So I don't really have much of a need to pay for, I don't have to pay for much in cash. So I haven't fished in my change in a systematic way. Back when I was transacting in person with cash relatively frequently, I would always check my change, and I had more than a few cashiers look at me and go, "Oh, I'm sorry, did I give you incorrect change?" And I'm like, no, I'm a collector. I'm just weird like that. I look at all the change that I get. And then all my friends were like, "Come on, you're holding up the line. Like, we just want to get coffee. You don't need to."
Right. Take your lollipop and go.
Yeah, exactly. But no, so in answer to your question, I've never really done it in a systematic way, but I do enjoy doing it. And if I find something cool in my change, I'm such a hoarder that I'll pull out. If I find a Jefferson nickel from like before 1960, I'll pull it out. Or if I find I think it was Dennis Tucker posted on Facebook recently. He works for Whitman Publishing, just for our audience members who might not know. He had a post on Facebook where he found a 1971 D Lincoln cent. And he basically said finding a Lincoln cent that old is a little bit like finding a wheat cent or some earlier design. He kind of compared it to that because, you know, wheat cents and other sort of interesting or collectible coins are becoming less and less common in circulation, although really aren't all coins collectible to one degree or another.
Sure, certainly. Well, one of the things to consider, I mean, when we're looking at that 1971 cent, for instance, after 1982, you know, we see a composition change, and pre-82 up to 82 cents were made out of an alloy that was primarily copper. After that, these were basically zinc plated steel cents. What has been happening, I think, since that transition, is some speculators have been like sorting pre-82 copper Lincoln cents and putting them aside in the eventuality that, you know, copper prices rise to the point that they can melt them down and turn a profit. As far as collecting them is concerned, though, there's a way to do this. I mean, Chris is right. And it's funny that he brought up 1919, because when I was going through all of these rolls of coins and putting my tubes together of the dates, because what I would do is I would have a plastic tube, you know, for every date and mint mark that I found that was a wheat cent from my coin roll hunting. And I would put them in there. And the 1919 actually filled up. Like, I probably had two tubes of that, because that was a very high mintage year. And that would be a year you would still find. And most of the coins you would find would be in AG3 or G4, which is, like, you know, in grading terms, about good or good. If you know anything about coin grading, you know that good actually means terrible. Most of the design has been worn off of the coin.
But both the 1919 and 1929 cents that I found were both just beaten to hell. They were in very rough condition, but it was still cool to find them in change and to think that they might have been circulating for close to a century.
Yeah. So, but this is how you do it. So the first thing is you identify yourself in some way discreetly to your local bank branch as a collector who likes to collect old coins. And then what you do is you find a second bank, which in the parlance of coin roll hunters, we call the dump bank. And what the dump bank is the bank where you take your sorted and search rolls and you return them so that you can deposit the money back into your bank. The goal is that you retain your investment. If you pull out $100 worth of pennies, cents, you sort through them, you keep $1 or $2 worth of them, you return the $98 and you get that back on your account, or you cash them out, so you don't have like this giant like bag of coins. And this way, you're only paying for what you're using. You're not paying $4 a coin, $5 a coin. You're paying us 1 cent per 1 cent coins, an even exchange. And so you go to your regular bank, you ask them what rolls do you have, and then you buy those rolls from them. You take them, you spend the weekend sorting them out, and then you take what you want, and then you return the rest. I recommend for this that you have an album. It can either be a sophisticated Dansko album or a Lighthouse album or Interceptual album with the plastic slider, or it can be as simple as just a H.E. Harris or Whitman coin folder, which is open, has an open face, the little hard cardboard cutouts with the for the coins, and you just press them in there. And what I would say is you go through it, you start to fill all your holes based on all the dates with whatever is acceptable that you find, and then you dump your coins, you get your money back, and then you go and try to get a new allotment of coins. And as you're going through them, you start sorting them by date, and any coins that look nice by any date, regardless of whether you have them in your book, you put them aside. And then you start going through what I call is the comparison phase. This is where, you take, oh, this is a 1968 with some red on it. Let me see what 1968 I have in my book. Oh, the 1968 in my book is completely brown. Well, I like the one with the red better. So I'm going to pull the 68 out of my book. I'm going to put the new one in there. And now the old 68, either I can decide to keep it because I'm fond of it, or it can go back into my dump pile. And as you do this over time, over a couple months, you'll find that you're gradually improving the quality of your set. You haven't spent 1 cent over the cost of the coins and gas and your time, which is, a leisure activity here. And you start to fill in all of the holes in your albums. Now, when you are buying your albums, one point to make out, the publishers sometimes make albums that have proof issues as well as the circulation strikes. You will not, for the purposes of building a collection out of face value, want to purchase the albums with the proof holes, because you will not likely find more than a couple of proofs in circulation throughout your entire life. So that usually happens when a youngster gets hold of a coin collection and takes the coins and spins them, or some mistaken situation, or maybe a coin shop gets a coin that's a little bit impaired and they just throw it in the till or whatever. You're not usually going to find proof. So avoid the ones that say that they have proof strikes as well. But anyway, this is the way I suggest you go about it. The idea that I had about getting tubes to put the wheat cents in is also a fairly good idea, because you can actually sell the wheat cents at a profit, not a big profit. But with some quantity, maybe you get, 3 or 4 cents per coin. And it is possible, believe it or not, to find AU and sometimes still red, brown wheat cents in circulation. Although again, this has usually become because an old roll was sitting around and got spent, sometimes by mistake. On the Lincoln cent side, you usually have a few choices as far as the coin folders. There's going to be a 1909 forward album, probably a 1909 to 1940 thereabouts. Then you're going to have a 1941 to 1974. I think the 41 to 74 album should be completely doable in circulation, with the possible exception of the 43 zinc cents. That would be 43 P, D, and S. Those are fairly inexpensive to buy at a coin shop, coin show, or from eBay. You may want to be on the lookout for coins that have been reprocessed to make them look artificially shiny. Zinc has a tendency to stain, and eventually in circulation will turn black. But those coins are maybe the only ones from that 41 to 74 album that might be hard to find and change. Anything from 75 to present would take you probably no more than a few weeks of really looking for to fill. There's also a Memorial Scent album from 59 to 98, and there's a 99 to 2008 album. So the Lincoln Scent album, the little coin folder albums, are subdivided because it's a huge series. It's been going on for over 100 years. I think having a cool set from 41 to 74, then 75 to 2013 is something that you definitely would enjoy putting together if you decide to do so. Now, let's move on to nickels. So the Jefferson nickel debuts in 1938. Chris mentioned the 1950D, which is going to be a tough one for you. This was a heavily hoarded issue. Almost, probably more than half of the mintage was hoarded as the coin came out and was then marketed and sold at a premium. And when coin investors and speculators were collecting and holding on to rolls of coins, the price of a 1950D roll of coins, $2 worth of nickels, 40 coins, was selling for a couple hundred dollars, believe it or not. The price of the 1950D nickel today isn't that extreme, but they are worth more than face value. And so that will be a coin you'll be very unlikely to find in change. However, I did find one. I found one in about AU. But the coins that are really going to be tough to find outside of that are going to be the 1942 to 1945 nickels. And Chris, you know why.
Yeah, so during World War II, actually, incidentally, Charles, I did once find a 1970 proof quarter in change. So people can, it does happen. It's very rare, but it does happen. All right. So, as Charles mentioned, nickels struck during World War II from 1942 to 1945, they're a little bit different in that they contain silver. They have a little bit of precious metal in them. During the war, nickel was designated as an important war resource, and in order to decrease the U.S. Mint's usage of that metal, which was critical to a number of war industries, a new alloy was adopted, 56% copper, 35% silver, and 9% manganese. So there was no nickel in the nickels. They're really not nickels at all. And so these coins circulated during the war, but they had a distinguishing feature that was adopted in part to help speed their removal from circulation after the war. They had the mint mark was enlarged and moved above Monticello's dome. On the pre-war issues, the mint mark was much smaller and nestled to the right of the building on the coin's reverse. But during the war, they moved it above, they enlarged it and moved it above Monticello's dome. So with that distinguishing mark, it became a lot easier to identify the coins, pull them out. So you don't see nearly as many of them in circulation. In fact, I don't think I've ever come across a war nickel in circulation, though you can buy complete circulated or complete sets of the coins in sort of average circulated condition for not a huge amount of money. So if you want the complete set and are willing to compromise on quality, you do have some options. But pulling them out of circulation is going to be exceedingly difficult. And the silver in them isn't worth very much. They have a melt value of about the silver in them melts for about $1.52. So it's not as though if you find one, you've hit the jackpot in terms of silver, obviously. But you know, they are sort of a curiosity and they are sort of easy to identify. So people tend to pull them out of circulation fairly often.
Right. And the way the sort of the budget albums are usually sorted, they'll run the Jefferson nickels from 38 to the early 60s. And then there'll be an album from like 62 to 95 and then 96 to the present. I'm actually not really a huge fan of the redesigned nickels in the 90s forward. I think they're like, you know, they're a different type, although they still feature Jefferson. So they're kind of lumped together in these albums. So to me, like, you know, you would want to get the 38 to 61 album because those 50s and early 60 nickels are fun to find, knowing that you may have to get, you know, pay a little bit extra for those war nickels and the 50D. But definitely the 62 to 95, everything in that set, you should be able to find at face value. All right, let's move on to the dimes, Chris. So the dimes are going to be easily found in circulation starting in 1965. The Roosevelt dime doesn't start in 1965. In fact, starts in 1946. But the reason why you're not going to find anything with any regularity before 65 is because dimes struck before then were made of 90% silver.
The composition of the dimes dated 1964 and before are 90% silver, as you mentioned, the standard circulating coin fineness, silver coin fineness, which incidentally was just phased out in the last couple of years. The mint had been striking 900 fine coins for inclusion in the silver proof set, but then I believe in 2019, and I think we talked about this on a recent episode, I think, they changed the, the law was changed to allow the mint to increase the silver fineness for coins in a silver proof set to 0.999 fine, like the bullion coins. So the 90% silver fineness is no more. But the 90% silver dimes from 1946 to 1964 contain about $1.96 worth of silver. So again, just like with the war nickels, you're not hitting the jackpot if you find one. It is fun to find one. I think I found 1949 and 1964, I think, are the two dates, silver dates that I picked out of circulation. At least those are the ones that I can think of off the top of my head. And so, like I said, it's $1.96 worth of silver. And again, you can find them, especially if you're roll hunting and going through large volumes of dimes. You will likely stumble upon a silver coin or two. Apparently, some people have had luck checking Coinstar reject trays. Apparently, there's some sometimes silver coins will fall through the system and end up in the reject tray. But generally speaking, you're probably not going to find a ton as you look through rolls. But again, every time you find one, it's like Charles said, it's a little bit of a treasure hunt. And there is a bit of a thrill to finding that tiny little bit of circulating silver. So, yeah, so dimes, again, you know, post-65, you're probably going to find quite a few. Pre-65, not so much.
In fact, actually, it's funny that Chris says that because I'm holding in my hand right now maybe very good 1954 Roosevelt dime that I found in change about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
So, and this is in the pandemic. So they do happen with very, very, very infrequently. In fact, actually, I think I found more silver quarters in change than dimes, but they're out there. Of course, you know, if we were having this video produced in the early 1970s, this junk silver, circulated silver, would have been much more common. But the federal government actually made a concerted effort to yank all these coins from change after they issued the clad coinage, even though they promised that they wouldn't. There's actually photographs of the mint with giant sorting machines going through their coinage as it was returned through the federal system, pulling out the silver, which is why the silver disappeared so quickly. Now, for the dimes, you will notice that there are two dates that are really interesting, 1982 and 1983. They're not necessarily rare by any stretch. They made hundreds of millions, 500 million of each 82 and 82 P&D mint, and 640 million 83 P, 730 million 83 Ds. But there were no mint sets released those years. So these coins were not preserved in any appreciable quantity to the tune of the million or so mint sets that the mint would have produced for coin collectors. So putting these aside in better grades, I would say extra fine and better, you can actually sell those for premium over face value. In fact, actually, I'm going through my Harris album right now. These are coins I put together in 2000, and I was able to pull out and mint state 82P from change and a mint state 82D from change. However, the best 83P I found was probably about an AU, and the 83D was probably an XF. And these are all from going to my bank, asking my bank for coins, looking through the rolls, grabbing the ones that are nice, constantly upgrading it. In fact, actually going through this album that I put together, I'm astonished. I'm looking at a 1973 Roosevelt dime that looks as nice now as the day it was struck. And I know I pulled that from change. So it is doable. But again, you want to get that album starting in 1965. Let's move on to quarters, Chris. So the same thing with quarters, right? Pre-65 is going to be pretty tough because they're silver. What is the silver quarter going for these days?
The silver in the silver quarter, at least its melt value according to Coinflation, is $4.89. So just shy of $5 worth of silver.
Yeah, that's nice. And that's one of the reasons why you're not going to find too many. So with quarters, you have basically three major periods during the last half a century or more. You have the 65 to 98 quarters. These have the Flanagan heraldic eagle reverse and his more or less his original obverse design. Starting in 1999, you have the state quarter program. That runs for 1999 to 2008, and in 2009, the Mint created additional territorial and Washington, D.C. quarter reverses to the tune of 5 designs per year, by the way. So this is a very lengthy set. It's 56 designs, I think 56.
Because you would DC in 5 territories. So yeah, that'd be 56 in total.
Yeah, so 56 designs there. And then after that, you had the America the Beautiful quarter design, which just wrapped up this year with the Tuskegee release. So with the quarters, I think more than any of the other designs, even though it's more money, you have quite a bit of things you could collect. It's amazing that the state quarters are now... we're looking at over 20 years old, and I remember, I literally remember the day the first coins were released, and they were selling rolls on QVC for about $100 a roll for $10 in quarters, because they were first day of issue Delaware quarters from the Philadelphia Mint
for $100 in 1999. Wow.
I remember going to my bank at the time and asking for the new designs as they came out and getting brand new rolls of the quarters from the bank. You know, I didn't even have to buy them for a premium. I just got them at face value. Of course, at the time, the Mint was selling rolls and they were also selling small bags, collectible bags like canvas bags with the quarters in it. And those are available. You can probably find those in the collector market. But all of these coins are available at face value. And again, you'd want to go to your bank. You'd want to, you know, get a quantity, you know, you might want to get 10, 20, 30 rolls of quarters, whatever they have on hand. Your best bet is if they're not freshly rolled rolls, especially if you're trying to get the older dates. Again, you want to go through them, do your sorting, find any silver if you're lucky, and then start to fill your holes. And again, you want to take your coins to the dump bank so you don't get them back again, and also so you don't annoy the people at the bank you're trying to get the coins from.
I imagine the people at the dump bank are probably sooner or later they're going to recognize you and go, why does this person keep bringing in so much change?
Right. I think one or two nuisance collectors won't drive them too nuts.
No, I imagine that the number of people who do that are probably diffused over a fair amount of space, so they're probably fine.
So then we get to the jackpot series, if you will. This is the half dollar series. I remember kind of laughing. I saw a book published maybe 10 or 15 years ago at like my local bookstore about how you can get rich coin roll hunting, which is probably not true unless you find a 1982 D small date copper coin or a 1969 double die or something. But they were basically,
well, that's kind of a genre unto itself, isn't it? The book and article of, hey, is your penny worth $10,000? Like that is basically a genre at this point, isn't it?
It's a well-trod chestnut of the coin journalism industry that we get these people who think they have these coins. But the thing is that this isn't so likely to happen that you're going to find a lot of material that's going to like really be super profitable. However, half dollars haven't really been a mainstay in circulation for 30 years, and so or even more. I think the last time I got a half dollar in change, like incidentally, that I spent like without thinking, was in 1982-83.
I've gotten one half dollar in change ever. It was either one or two half dollars, but I remember I was surprised that I got half dollars in change at all. It's to say that I received half dollars in change for one transaction. I was at a farmer's market in Burlington, Vermont, and the proprietor of a stand that I bought, I think I bought a wallet. I think it was a leather. I seem to remember that it was like a handcrafted leather goods station. And I paid for whatever it is that I bought. And, you know, and I got half dollars in change. I think they were dated in either the 90s or the early aughts. And I did a double take. I'm like, oh my God, wow, half dollars. And it just, you know, I think that's the only time I've ever transacted, or I've ever conducted a transaction and received half dollars. So it, you know, it never happened within my lifetime. So maybe back in the 80s, it was different.
Yeah. For me, it was in October of 1983. Sean Connery had reprised his role as James Bond, despite saying he wouldn't in Never Say Never Again. And I was at the movie theater with my dad buying one of those chocolate nonpareils with the little like white dots on them. I forget.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah. So anyway, that was the last time I got or paid for anything in a half dollar incidentally without doing it on purpose. I did actually make a point a few years ago. I was a member of the Coin Collector Community Forum, and I asked the folks there to help me spend $100,000 in golden dollars and half dollars to try to get the coins to circulate, which I believe they did and then some. So I would at that point like purposefully spend half dollars, but that's really more on a lark, not on a actually seeing them and change situation. But when you go to the bank, if they do have half dollars, sometimes they'll get them from like people who have saved them for many years, and they will have provided them to the bank. And on occasion, you're going to find Franklin half dollars. On occasion, you'll find pre-1970 Kennedy half dollars. Of course, the 64 Kennedys are 90% silver. The Franklins are 90% silver. The Kennedys from 65 to 70. And you probably won't really find the 70s because they were made for mint sets only. But occasionally they get broken up and the coins might get spent. But those coins will tend to be, you know, more or less in the extra fine range the Kennedys will be. The Franklins can be worn all the way down to good. But what is the going rate for a silver coal half dollar?
So the 64 Kennedy half, the 90% is $9.78 worth of silver. The 40%, the brief silver clad composition, is $4. And for the base metal coins, it is
the base metal coins probably worth 15 cents.
The base metal coin even less. According to Coinflation, the base metal 71 to 2020 Kennedy half dollar has 10 cents of worth of metal in it. Its melt value is 10 cents. So in a sense, you'd be losing quite a bit of money if you went and melted them. You'd be better off spending them at face value for the most part. Although if you wanted to keep them as curiosities like I did after my my Burlington, Vermont transaction in back in 2013, you should probably just hold on to them because they're worth more as curiosities than their metal value.
Right. So if you take them to your bullion dealer or your coin shop, they are probably going to give you less than spot price because the weight of the coin is going to be less because it has worn off some of the metal in its circulation. You won't likely find large dollars, Eisenhower dollars, in any quantity from most of your banks, but it is possible to complete a series of Eisenhower dollars, with the exception of the 73, because that was struck for mint sets only. But from 71 to 72, you can find these coins. From 74, there is no 75 Ike dollar. Those are bicentennial issues. But you can find most of the dates of the series if you go to a bank and ask them if they have large dollars. They won't always have large dollars. On occasion, they will. But you can get those coins for face value. Again, you can get Susan B. Anthony dollars for face value and golden dollars from 2000 through about 2011. But the majority will be the first year or two of Sacagawea issues and the first year or two of the presidential dollar issues. The rest of them are made only for collectors. I find that the golden dollars really start to tarnish quickly and are not appealing to me to buy in circulated condition. But it is possible. And if you're, again, trying to help a youngster put a collection together, those are available to you. I do have a fascinating tale for you. A collector I know who's actually pretty sophisticated Eisenhower dollar collector. He sold his collection for over $100,000 because he put together a top tier registry set collection. But he had a side hustle where he would sell pre-82 copper, and he would sell uncirculated Eisenhower dollars. And he must have had a connection, like some connection I cannot imagine, because he would buy $1,000 bags of Eisenhower dollars on a regular basis. So he would buy these things and just sort through them. And if they were mixed date bags, which most of them were, he would find silver eagles in there, and he would find Morgan dollars and peace dollars in there. Not with any great frequency or regularity, but like people would just spend silver eagles as big dollars. And people would take old, you know, beat up Morgan and peace dollars and just turn them into banks, and banks wouldn't know what to do with them. And they would bundle them with these coins and sell them off and gross. And that I always found that amazing. He would make $200-$300 and silver coins practically on every other bag he would get from this company. And then sometimes he was able to get bags that were all like one date Eisenhower dollars. He had a bag of 72 D's, which was not available in mint sets. They didn't start putting Ike dollars in mint sets until 73. But he had a bag of Unk 72 D's. He sent about 300 in to get graded and sold them at a profit. And it was just a very lucrative situation for him. And it blew my mind that in like 2010, 2015, something that period of time, that people were still able to do that.
Oh, wow. That is really interesting. And also, whenever I think of large volumes of Eisenhower dollars, I always think of the beginning of the movie Casino, in that scene where the guy walks into the... I assume you've seen it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Classic.
Yeah, yeah. You know the scene where at the beginning where the guy walks in with a briefcase and you have the... I think it's Robert De Niro who does the initial narration, where he talks about, you know, how all the casino is just designed to swindle the people who go in, and they have the counting room with all the dollar coins going around. And I always got a kick out of seeing that. And I've actually spent an Eisenhower dollar, because back in 2019 for the Great American Coin Hunt, the coin club out in Ohio that I was a member of for a while had a little to participate in the Great American Coin Hunt. They gave out little bags of collectible coins and circulated silver certificates and the like, really, you know, low dollar stuff that no dealer would probably want to bother with. They gave little bags of it out to all the club members. And then we were tasked with going out and spending them into the economy, not keeping them in our own collections. I don't know whose collection those things would have made a good addition to, but still. And so I went into a coffee shop in Ohio and I spent a couple of Eisenhower dollars, and predictably the people behind the counter looked at me kind of funny, looked at me, oh, that's kind of cool. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's an Eisenhower dollar. So.
Yeah. I wonder what the look on their face would have been if you would have paid with a, one of the Baseball Hall of Fame, half dollars.
Yeah. The concave coins. I bet that would have raised some eyebrows.
So anyway, folks, I hope this has been informative and educational for you, especially if you're starting out or want to get a youngster starting out. It is possible to build a pretty substantial, pretty sophisticated set of modern coins without paying a premium. And the process of building the coins, I think, is informative because it helps you kind of like look at what coins look like in quantity and in quality. It allows you to develop for yourself a sense of connection with the coins. And it also helps you appreciate the value of coins. When you start to see that certain dates are very difficult to find and you need them for your album, when you go out and look for them, it helps you become a sophisticated buyer and consumer of coins. Every coin collection is worthwhile, whether or not you have buku dollars to spend on coins or if you're pulling coins out of circulation. It's a process. It's a hobby. And you're every bit as connected to me and my interest in coins as a writer and a publisher for collecting coins and change as somebody who's put together the world's finest collection of drape bust dollars. So this is a community hobby. Everybody's welcome to participate in it. And thank you for spending the last hour listening to us talk about collecting coins from change. Next week, we're actually going to take this a little step farther, and we're going to talk about how to build a really cool album of coins, classic US coins, which are coins you will have to go out and buy for a premium. But we will do so to give you the best practices and what to look for, and sort of give you an idea of what the cost might be to put together one of my favorite albums, the Dansko 7070. Until then, I'm Charles Morgan.
I'm Chris Bullfinch.
And we're Coin Week, and we'll be back next week. Happy collecting, everybody. If you like this podcast, please share with your friends. Remember, you can download every episode of the Coin Week podcast for free on the iTunes Store, stream it online on our YouTube channel, or on coinweek.com. For Coin Week, I'm Editor Charles Morgan. Until next time, happy collecting.